You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us today. This show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever that technology happens to be in your life. Sitting across on the other side of the booth, Art Factora, my producer. How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing great, Steve.
You had a good week?
I did. I had a great week. And I forgot to tell you last week that I had a bit of a foodie week.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, the whole food generation, the world in Vancouver, I'm sure it's the same in major cities around, but it's really taken a turn, and it's the bloggers and the Twitterers that have taken over sort of the PR of what where's the great places to eat and places to go. And last week, I think it was Tuesday night, I got to have a great dinner at Chin Chin thanks to the friends at Top Table. There was a great winery, Whitehaven, coming in from New Zealand. So I was able to rub shoulders with Casey from the Best of Food and Wine on Thursday nights. So she brought me over as her date. And, you know, I got to sip some wine. I got to eat some great food. So that was great.
Chin Chin's not a bad place to be.
Not a bad place to be. And what I find interesting is that, yeah, these people, they're using Twitter really as a way to, you know, get the word out. And I think it's really great that restaurants have embraced it. You go to some of the restaurant chains and they will post on a daily basis like what their special of the day is, you know, what special, whatever the chef special is, what they're making for the day. And you're thinking, you know, you check your Twitter account, you're on your way home, you want to pick up some takeout or maybe meet your wife, your girlfriend downtown for a place to eat. And you're thinking, you know, what better place instead of going to the same one over and over again not knowing what to expect and ordering the same steak every time you go out. You know, you have a chance, check your Twitter feed, boom, you figure out that maybe lamb is brought in special from
New Zealand.
Somewhere.
Yes, there you go. Well, that's the whole idea. Location-based services, understanding what's, you know, understanding and using the technology. The internet is a great way, and this technology is a great way for us to reach around the world, but sometimes it works really great just reaching around the block.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it works good from that perspective. Well, I had a pretty busy week as well. I saw you Saturday night. Was it Saturday?
Friday night.
You came to see.
That too.
Yeah, we've wrapped up a funny thing happened on the way to the forum down at the Jericho Art Center. Steve's every once in a while stepping on stage. Moment. So you had fun there?
I did. I hope that's not the last time I see an address, too.
It wasn't a dress. It was a toga.
Okay.
It looked like a
tomato,
dress.
Tomato, tomato.
Well, see, the toga is the outer wrapper. But I got to tell you, it's the first time I've ever curtsied in a show at the end. And I quite like that. It was fun to do the curtsy.
You were very dainty.
I skipped.
I was surprised.
I wasn't in drag. I was a guy. Just happened to it was the costume. It was fair, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I was in drag, but I wasn't. It was it was a fun show. We had a good time.
You're the owner of a house of ill repute.
Yeah, Marcus Lycus.
Yeah,
the Byron Seller of the Flesh of Beautiful Women, as they introduced my character.
And they were beautiful.
They were beautiful, and the whole cast was wonderful. Congratulations to Fighting Chance Productions who put on the show. They do. I think they have four or five more shows this season. So anybody that's interested in live theater in Vancouver. Should check out the Fighting Chance website. They're going to be doing some great productions coming along down at Jericho Arts Center and a few other places around town. So it was good to see you there. It was good to see you and meet your new significant other. She was very nice.
Yes, and she loved it. She's good. A huge fan of the arts.
Good stuff.
Including this guy.
Including you. Yes. You're on stage soon too, aren't you? Here as we're doing all these self-promotional items. On November
17th. At Laugh Lines in New West on Columbia.
And Laugh Lines in New West. I'm coming. Is it going to be funny?
I hope so. It's a comedy show, so if it's not funny, then you could ask for half of your money back.
And what have you got against minors?
I just think that they're taking from the land what should just be kept there.
Young people.
Minors.
Oh, the young people.
Not
miners.
The gold miners.
Okay, good stuff.
Young people.
Lots of news in the technology world this week. Oh, we should tell you what's coming up on the show today. We're going to be visiting Joseph Pupulu Pupulo is coming in. He's got a great name. Joseph Pupulo, spelled Pupolo, but it's pronounced Pupulo.
Makes sense.
He had to get beat up the odd time at school. Joseph's going to be joining us to talk about why his mom is addicted to Facebook. His mother is an avid Facebook user, a little bit of an older lady. So we're going to be talking about how social media is working in that demographic. And Todd Maffin will be joining us. You know, of all the news that struck me this week, a couple of things came out most. First of all, Kobo has released the Vox, which is their Android tablet. We'll be talking about that in great detail next week. And a little bird has rumored that we might be get one to give away. So.
What?
We might be getting one to give away.
Can I?
No, you can't enter. It's the 10th anniversary of the iPod this week. But the news that caught my attention the most was that internet service providers, ISPs, can do something called throttling service. They can take your service and measure what you're using, how much bandwidth you're using, and then they can squeeze the pipe that's flowing into your home and actually give you lower bandwidth. They can manipulate that.
Like a specific home, if I happen to be a guy.
Or a specific activity, yeah.
Wow.
And there's a report was put out of the worst in the world, and guess who the worst throttler of all of the major ISPs in the civilized countries in the entire world is?
Well, I don't want to get in trouble with anyone, so you tell me.
Rogers.
Oh.
What the heck are they thinking? They throttle, and it's not by a small percentage how much more they throttle than others. Now there could be some legitimacy behind throttling. If you have people that are doing downloading movies and torrents and stuff like that, and maybe using too much, there might be a reason that you want to. But gamers are being throttled. People who use voice over IP services that aren't Rogers services are being throttled. They're throttling all sorts of people that probably shouldn't be, and so they've been earmarked and they've been identified as the worst throttler. On our planet.
Not cool, Rogers.
Way to go, Rogers. And on top of this, we hear the news this week that Rogers has decided they've actually registered to become a chartered bank as well. with their track record of customer service, Rogers is going to become a bank. And they know where if they're going to throttle the money coming out. No, you can only take out $100 this week. That would be bad, I think. I don't think it's part of the game plan.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins us for App of the Week.
How are you, sir?
I'm good. What's your app?
I have the iTunes Movie Trailers app for the phone and for the pad.
Really?
Yeah. It's, for the longest time, whenever somebody's put their trailer on the internet, if they've been using if they've been using the QuickTime format, this has been going back years, they've always kept a collection of all of those trailers on the Apple website.
Yeah.
In the trailer section. Yeah. It's been like that forever. And it's great to go there, you know, every now and again as a movie buff myself, and just to see the five new trailers that are out that week, what's going to be neat, what's going to be interesting, just to check them out.
Do you do that?
I do that.
See, I'm not a big trailer fan. And I've had this conversation with somebody else recently. It was Lindsay Smith we were talking about, because we were talking about the IMDb app, which has all these features. The only thing I use IMDb for is to look up who is in what movie or to see what people are saying about a movie. But I never watch the trailers. She says she always watches the trailers because they have them there as well.
Well, and, sorry.
Go ahead, you.
I think the difference is I don't watch TV. I don't have TV. I don't pay for cable.
So you're watching a trailer for what?
To just see what movies that are coming out that I might be interested in seeing.
Oh, you will watch movies, though?
Oh, yeah. No, I still watch them. It's not independent. I don't watch the trailers for their own purpose. I go to see, in 5-6 months, who's going to be out and what's going to be neat. Oh, I'll see that when it comes out, because if I go to the theater and I don't watch TV, I haven't seen all the marketing ads. I just go, well, I remember that one looked cool in the thing, and I'll watch that one.
Okay, so
and it's just very well set up. It's very well defined. You can watch it in whatever format you like. You where the theaters are, what the theaters are in, what the times are. It's just a great app.
I'm going to go completely away from the movie theme today.
Fair enough.
I've been using Hootsuite an awful lot as my main Twitter client. For those of you out there listening, Twitter is, of course, the micro-blogging standard. Some people understand it, some people don't. I've been getting increasingly into doing the tweeting on Twitter. I have to be careful, though, because the word tweet is now copyright, because the folks at Twitter copywrote the word tweet, which is ridiculous. But a good Canadian company, Hootsuite, developed in Vancouver, and it's a really nice set of tools. Makes it really easy for me to structure and follow all of the people that I'm following and do my own tweeting. So Hootsuite, and it formats just beautifully for both the iPhone and the iPad and other tablets.
Nice.
So Hootsuite is my choice. Do you use Hootsuite, Art?
No, I just use a regular Twitter app.
You got to try Hootsuite.
I will now.
There you go. That's App of the Week with Chris Miller.
Thank you.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
It is always a good day on Dottotech when Todd Maffin joins us in studio. It's nearly as good a day when Todd Maffin joins him from Todd Maffin Central because he's so darn busy, but we're going to let him work from his home office today. How are you doing, Todd?
I'm well. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing just great. You spent 6 weeks on the road traveling all over the country.
Yeah, it's kind of something that normal people probably wouldn't do, but I'm a bit peculiar that way, I guess.
Yeah, lots of speaking gigs all over.
Lots of speaking gigs, some consulting work, you know, kind of the life of a nerd, as it were.
Well, lots has happened since you kind of left us last. I mean, number one on the news, I guess, is the passing of an icon with Steve Jobs. What were your thoughts? You know, you certainly had a lot of time to probably digest it on planes and thinking about things. I know that Apple's holds a special place in your life. What were your thoughts on Jobs passing?
It'll be interesting, I think, to see. Certainly it was, unfortunately, not a surprise. Everyone knew that he was ill and was not getting any better. I think everyone recognized, especially when he turned the CEO role over to someone else, to anyone else, really, that there'd be no coming back. What I think will be interesting to see is how Tim Cook, the new CEO, handles the company. Cook is a very different kind of individual. He was sort of the yin to Steve's yen, have I got that metaphor right? He was the other side, you know, where Steve Jobs was the visionary, you know, somewhat bombastic in his charisma. Tim Cook is very much the opposite. He ran Apple supply chain and inventory systems, kind of a dull job, and so far the only Apple event that we've seen Tim Cook with, he really only opened it and then turned it over to three or four other executives who've had a lot more stage time. So it'll be interesting to see how Apple, I think, ends up being a company a few years down the road when they don't have that visionary leader. But I think it was a wise choice. You know, I mean, I don't think you could replace Steve Jobs with someone that has that sort of that level of charisma. I think this sort of a complete change of pace was right.
There isn't anybody with that that leadership that kind of mashup of what Steve Jobs represented. It's, you know, and I think it's a little bit unfair for us to try and start judging Tim Cook on his public performance of the iOS 5 and the iPhone 4, the 4S launch, because it was just the day before Jobs passed, and they must have known what was going on. And so the subplot and the subtext underneath that entire presentation, and it was also the first major one that Steve Jobs hadn't attended, they were under extraordinary, it was an extraordinary time for them. It's not going to be a normal product launch as we're going to see coming down the pipe.
No, that's for sure. And, you know, I mean, the unfortunate timing was that I think a lot of the Mac bloggers and the media were expecting something better, frankly. They were expecting the iPhone 5. So this came as a bit of a surprise to folks that it was sort of an adapted version, an interesting adaptation, certainly an enhanced version, but more of an evolutionary upgrade of their phone than a revolutionary new version that they had expected.
And Jobs' influence will still be keenly felt from all the reports that we're hearing. The iPhone 5 will still be very much a Jobs-inspired product, and we shouldn't be surprised with that. His hand will be on the product pipeline for some time to come as it moves along. And so let's move on to talking about the iPhone 5, 4S itself and iOS 5. Have you got your hands on one yet?
I don't. I have it on order. And you know what? I have to tell you, Steve, I really was hoping not to be able to order this one. You know, I kind of thought, well, it's just as I said, it's sort of an evolutionary upgrade. But the only two differences between this phone and the predecessor model, the iPhone 4, there's three. One is it's faster. That's okay. I find my phone just fine. The camera is much improved. It does a lot better quality video. It does broadcast quality high definition video in a tiny little camera. But most importantly is this really interesting little assistant that people have been hearing about called Siri. It originally started actually as a software project for the military and then was eventually spun out and became a private company, which Apple came into its sights and then it acquired. And just as fact, a few days ago, the people who were behind Siri, the actual the first sort of architects of that software that came along as part of the deal with Apple, have just left, and they've gone on to another as yet undetermined project. But it's this Siri, it's this personal assistant that kind of will speak back to you, look things up for you, and it has a bit of a sense of humor as well, is kind of what's capturing a lot of the attention. And to be perfectly honest, it's kind of the reason I bought this new one too.
It's definitely the most compelling feature, and in some people's opinion, it is going to be a game changer. I think it's interesting. You're the first person on the show that's mentioned its roots in military. It was designed as a command and control for battlefield commanders to be able to actually talk to systems in real time and get in feedback and information coming back. But it wasn't quite suited for that particular environment. But it may be well suited to our mobile devices. It's interesting you mentioned the sense of humor. There's already websites up that are giving Siri's best responses. Someone was telling me today that if you say, Siri, what is the meaning of life? It will come back with, really? Really?
And it has a number of different answers. Sometimes when you ask it, it'll say 42, which is a nod to one of the cold films out there. And I think what's happening is that the intelligence is not, in fact, in the phone software itself. It figures out what you're saying, and then it transfers it wirelessly over the cellular networks to Apple's headquarters, to where Siri's brains really are. Mm-hmm. So they can change this at a moment's notice, so that you could, in theory, say, who's the president of the United States? And if the president has just changed, if there's been an election, it'll know as of that day. They might even be able to program it to say, well, as of right now, it's Barack Obama. But in 2 hours after the inauguration, it'll be XYZ. So that's really quite interesting. My personal favorite, I have to tell you, is when someone asked it, I have a dead body in the trunk. What should I do with it? And Siri answered by saying, where would you like to dump the body? And then it listed five locations: an abandoned mine, a gravel pit, a trunk of your car. They must have a team of people at Apple who are just coming up with funny responses for it. And, it's odd that technology is like that, but as you know very well, the more technology becomes complicated, the more software and hardware becomes harder to use, the more people gravitate to these kinds of elements of humanity in software.
Looking for it, yeah.
Steve Jobs is so good at coming up with those.
And this concept of the cloud-based intelligence, where we're using the network itself as the computer, we've had this in mobility applications for a while. Any of the voice recognition and technology that we've been using from people like Valingo, that all does the exact same thing, where you don't ask your phone to do the processing and the heavy lifting. Instead, the data is just transferred to a central server where all of the heavy lifting occurs, and then you just get the response back. So this is a tried and true technology. This isn't something revolutionary that Apple's done. It's the language, it's the ability, and the ability of Siri to learn and to deal with context as opposed to direct commands that makes it special.
And what I think is going to be interesting in sort of having it all play out is you mentioned a perfect example. That's one example, Siri, all this voice technology you mentioned. It's all the intelligence is up in what we nerds refer to as the cloud, meaning it's transmitted wirelessly to a computer somewhere else connected to the internet. It's not actually in the device. But the more that we put these things out there in the cloud, there's benefits to that. For instance, all of my documents are on a server called Dropbox. They live on my computer, but anytime I save a document, it automatically uploads it to the sky, to some computer, I don't know where, in Virginia maybe, who knows, maybe Seattle. But at some point, I think we're going to get to a point where so much of the intelligence of what we do, whether it's our documents, whether it's the virtual assistants we interact with, are happening up in this internet layer, that if a company were really monopolistic and really wanted to be kind of evil, it would not be too much effort for them to say, it's been free up until now, but gosh, this is costing us a lot of money to have all these servers available on the internet, so we're going to charge everyone $5 a month. And what I fear is we might all kind of be stuck with that because we've already moved so much out. So now, if we decide not to do that, Siri will stop working. The voice recognition stuff will stop working. There's a danger there, I think.
And I think you've illustrated one danger. There's the second danger, which is just how secure. Now, I'm not talking about theft. I'm talking about what happens if somebody manages to plant a virus or create a situation that brings these servers down or clogs up the internet so the internet isn't available regionally for 24 hours or 36 hours.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's really popular right now are these short links, and they've been around for a while. The first one was Tiny URL, and it's still out there. And it's basically the idea behind these is sometimes, especially on news sites, if you want to send a link over Twitter or something or to a friend, it's the website address, the URL to a web page can be really long. You know, cbc.ca/Canada/world/today/Monday/ you know.
Yeah.
So these small URL shortening services will take that, log it in a database, and give you a little abbreviated version of it that you can send around. So many of the links on the internet these days, especially in the last year or two, have been these bit.ly links or these tiny URL, these shortened versions. Well, what happens if one of these servers goes down? Suddenly, those links stop working entirely because you need a bit.ly is the big one. You need this bit.ly server to be able to say, okay, someone has a link that says bit.ly/123. Well, let me look up what 123 is. Oh, they mean to go to this site on Steve Dotto's site. And if that server is down, we lose access to the whole World Wide Web, to those parts which use those links. So it's, again, this sort of, you know, in our attempts to make the internet more user-friendly and easier to use, sometimes, you know, we put it at bigger risk.
We do, and it's in that ease of use that we're creating that we become to rely on it that much more and we become that much more dependent. We've got to take a quick break. Todd Maffin is online with me. ToddMaffin.com is his website. I'm Steve Dotto, and this is Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Todd Maffin is a social media commentator, a consultant, a public speaker, and a regular guest here on Dotto Tech. You can find his stuff at toddmaffin.com, just one T on Todd Maffin. And Todd, you know what? It's a birthday of sorts this week. Guess what's 10?
I'm hoping you'll say me, but I know I'm a little older than that.
iPod.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it turned 10 on Sunday.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look at the, I'm sure after this, you'll race to the web and take a look at and reminisce with the pictures of the old iPod. But what, you know, and it's interesting, the iPod wasn't the first to market. It was like fifth to market. I mean, there was a fairly popular MP3 player, the Nomad from Creative Labs, which was a company that had excellent distribution. But the iPod just completely crushed all of this competition, and seemingly within like 2 or 3 years, and it's really changed. It changed the music industry, if you stop and think about it. With it, along with iTunes, before the iPod and iTunes came along, people had to buy full albums, full CDs. It made a single song available to purchase, and it's been a revolutionary product.
And you know what I think was really interesting was the iPod's a really, really good example of how Apple and arguably Steve Jobs, of course, with his influence there, but how Apple really programs or develops designs their hardware items around things that consumers don't even know they need yet. And you're right, you know, that I know the Creative Labs Nomad machine, as you described it. There was another one that was, and in fact, a lot of the models that were around that time actually looked like portable CD players, because that's what they started out being. They started out being, you know, your little thing. It was just slightly larger in diameter than a CD, and you put it in. It was, you know, you couldn't really put it in your pocket or anything like that. And then when they said, well, hey, wait a minute, we don't even have to use CDs. We can put a hard disk in this. So this is prior to the iPod. They still made it look like it was a giant CD inside. And that was really the difference between companies that were not Apple and companies that were Apple, because companies that were, you know, between companies that were not Apple and Apple. And the difference is that Apple programs stuff that they want to use, mm-hmm. as opposed to going out and focus group testing on, you know, asking customers. Because if you were to ask customers, hey, what would you like in a CD replacement? They would say, I don't know, kind of looks like a CD, it'd be round, and we don't know what we want until some sort of forward-looking organizations show it to us. And the iPad's a really great example of that. No one wanted an iPad, and then came out, and everyone said, well, I can't live without this.
And lost in memory there was the interface that Apple rolled out with it, which was that wheel mouse where they had the where you'd roll your thumb around the wheel in order to scroll up and down on a list and then press on the center button in order to manage it. It was pretty revolutionary for its time. It didn't last long because touchscreens took over eventually, but it was still a very creative application.
There's a great parody website out there I know you're aware of called The Onion.
Yes.
And The Onion produces a satirical newspaper, an actual newspaper you can buy on the street in the U.S., but it also has these great video series. And one of the videos they did, they all look like fake news reports. Well, they look like real news reports, but they're fake. And one of them they did was making fun of this wheel design that was, you know, quite revolutionary at the time. And they said that they had announced a new laptop, a new notebook, and they were replacing the keyboard with one of these scroll wheels. And so they demonstrated it. And the mock-up they made for the Onion was funny. You'd kind of turn the wheel until you got to the letter, and then you'd press the button, and then you'd turn it back to get to the next letter. And of course it was, you know, completely non-functional, but very funny nonetheless.
It would be. Now, interesting, the iPod is kind of lost in the shuffle, no pun intended, of all of the other technology that Apple's been rolling out. But I've recently, with the new version of the iPod Touch and iOS 5, we have an 8-year-old in our family, and she got an iPod Touch, she doesn't have an iPhone, but with the iOS 5 and the texting and all of the Wi-Fi capabilities on the iPod Touch, she thinks she has an iPhone. And she pretty much has all the functionality of an iPhone, except for the mobile, except when, you know, at the mall, she can't make a call. But all the rest of the time, she's calling and texting her dad and her mom, and she's back and forth, and she's doing FaceTime, and she's doing voice calls and Skype calls. All of this with a simple MP3 player. She barely uses it to play music. She uses it as her communication device.
Yeah, it is an iPhone. Let's be clear. It's just the only difference between an iPod and the iPhone. We're talking about the iPod Touch, the one that looks like an iPhone, is that the microchip that lets it play cellular calls has been ripped out. That's the only difference. But you're right. I mean, the Wi-Fi, you can use it for Skype calling. You can use it for FaceTime, which is the video calling back and forth. It really is quite amazing.
Forward and rear-facing camera. It's got everything going.
Yeah, it's funny because the very first version of the iPad, for instance, had a camera in it. The very first version had a camera prior to them releasing it. But then when they finally released it, there was no camera. When people opened up the case, you know, blogs and so on, they discovered that there was this hole. There was this little missing area where a camera would fit absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
Apple already, they could have put the camera in. Clearly it was there in prototype versions, but they pulled it out of version 1 because they thought, well, no one's going to buy an iPad 2 if it already has a camera in it. And I hate to say, you know, this is the Machiavellian genius of that company. I bought an iPad 2 because it had a camera in it.
Mm. Yeah, and you'll buy an iPad 3 when it comes out because it's got something new. We will indeed do that. Tell me about your new video series, your social media video series.
Well, as you know, a lot of work that I do is around sort of social media marketing and stuff, and a lot of people have always sort of asked me if I've got any videos on YouTube about how to use digital marketing, how to use social media, Facebook, Twitter better, and there's lots out there. Let's be frank. There's millions of videos on basic stuff like how to use Twitter better. So I've created this little, it's free, by the way, I'm not selling anything here. It's a little video tutorial called 30 Days to Social Media Marketing Awesomeness. Because I can't title things to save my life.
And, just minute, say this
days,
again. Say this again.
Volume. Every 3 or 4 days, it just sends you a new video. There's 10 videos in the series, and after 30 days, you never hear from me again. So it's 30days2awesome.org, not .com.
30days2awesome.org. We'll put that up. So it's 30 days to social media awesomeness.
So 30 days to social media marketing awesomeness.
Is awesomeness a real word?
It is now, yes. But the website URL, I thought I'd make it easier. It's just 30days2awesome.org.
And they will find links at toddmaffin.com as well?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Now tell me the sorts of tips that you give. Give us a little teaser of the sort of things that you will find with your video series that we won't find, as you say, in a million other places.
Yeah, of course. You know, a lot of people want to know things like, well, how do I market using Twitter to people? And all the other videos will say, well, you should get a Twitter account and you should retweet. And I'm just going to assume that you know kind of the basics that you need to have a Facebook account and stuff like that. One of the videos in this series that you'll get, I think, about a week in or so, will show you how to identify people who are actually talking about the kind of business that you do business in. So let's say that you run a clothing store. I'll show you how to find people who are physically close to your store, who are geographically within a few kilometers of your store, who are already talking about fashion, and then how to limit that list so that all you're seeing are people that are high influencers, so people who have a high degree of influence on the social media network. So they're kind of ninja tips that I used to teach my clients privately, but I'm just putting the video series out there for free.
Good stuff. And so that's awesome. We'll put the link up. I didn't write it down. It's it's still too long a URL. Are you using Bitly to shorten it up?
Of course.
And I got to get you to comment on one of my favorite story. Off the top of the show with Art, I talked a little bit about a report that came down of the worst throttlers, internet throttlers in the world. Lo and behold, Canada can be so proud of the fact that Rogers has been identified as the worst internet throttler on the planet.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty nasty. You know, it's a, I do feel, I have to say this, let me take the sort of the contrarian view on it, though. I do feel these companies, though, that have enormous networks and 95% of their bandwidth goes to 5% of people who are using it to torrent movies and do all sorts of stuff. That said, though, there's some good uses for torrent. One of the things that that pulls back an awful lot of bandwidth are perfectly legal and good uses like online backup services. You know, mm-hmm. that uses a lot of bandwidth. So, but no, things like throttling it back just because you're playing a game. Yeah, come on.
And that's who they're really is most being damaged by. But also the fact that they can do it for their phone services. You know, for people that are using alternate voice over IP services, that's just nasty.
Yeah, although, you know, I do think, though, if playing a video game is that critically important to you and you don't want latency, honestly, I think you can suck it up and pay for a higher bandwidth service. I don't have that much of a problem with it.
Okay. Well, we once again, Mr. Maffin, we can agree to disagree.
Yes.
We always find something to disagree on. You can find more of Todd's commentary and certainly sign up for his outstanding, I'm hoping it's outstanding, I'm giving you a great endorsement here, outstanding video series on social media marketing at toddmaffin.com. Todd, thanks for your time.
Anytime, Steve.
MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation is in to discuss all things Mac. How is Chris this week?
I'm very well. How's yourself, sir?
Myself is good, except I'm quite disappointed because I don't have Siri yet, because I don't have an iPhone 4S. I don't understand why Apple isn't making it run on my iPad 2, because from all indications are, it should be just fine. However, having said that, let's talk about Siri and what you're hearing on the street about it.
Siri, I was playing with it the other day. A couple of my friends picked it up. One of the guys at the store picked it up. He waited outside and grabbed it himself. It is really cool.
Okay, so for listeners who don't know, Siri is Apple's voice interface.
I would call it a voice-activated AI.
Voice-activated artificial intelligence. Mm. Or voice assistant. That basically allows you to talk to your phone. Now, we've had this for a while in several. I mean, even on the iPhone, we've
voice
had Dragon
control,
dictates.
Yeah.
We've had a certain amount of voice navigation control, the ability to do a little bit of dictation into the phone. On the Android platform, we've had applications like Valingo, which is a really mm-hmm. rich and a nice and powerful voice tool. But Siri goes way beyond what those do.
The big difference is not simply a voice recognition software. As you said, that's been around forever. I mean, you can use voice control on almost any phone, and it recognizes certain keywords. That's based simply on a command structure. Almost, if you want to relate it to older computers, it's kind of like DOS, how DOS used to work. You would type in a series of very specific commands. It would respond to those commands, i.e., on a phone, you'd say, call
yeah.
Jen. Call
yeah.
Steve.
And
call Steve, it would do
it. It'll come up, and then if it doesn't know, it'll come up with a list of the phone numbers.
Yeah, and that's simply a recognition of words, whereas Siri is a whole different avenue where instead of simply responding to direct commands, it's responding to the meaning behind the commands.
Which is very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can say, what's the weather? And people have been doing this weather demo, so I've seen it on Google. Mm-hmm. And that's why it comes up. But what's the weather like at home?
And because it knows
it'll
where
take context.
Yeah, because it knows where your house is because you've told it, and it knows what weather means, it will bring it. But the great part is in the demo they showed it, you can even ask, should I bring an umbrella today? And it will interpret the need for an umbrella as a warning of rain where your current work is, and therefore you should bring an umbrella. which is a for humans that's a really simple thing, but for a machine that's a complex logic tree that you have to follow.
So as a iPhone user, because it's coming out first on the iPhone, which is probably, I guess, the logical place for it, although I imagine we're going to find it in our other operating systems at some point, but having it out for the iPhone first, where, like, you've got an iPhone 4 still, you haven't upgraded to the 4S, what is the thing that is going to make you go to the 4S to get Siri? Like, what are the things that you're going to want to do?
Well, I mean, it's still in beta right now, but once it gets out of beta and it's solid, the time where you can just go, all right, hey, play some Stevie Nicks, and it'll just play some great music. Or if you want to just say, hey, make an appointment on Thursday with Bill Noonish, and it'll put it, you know, so we say 11:45 to 12:15, and it'll just figure that stuff out. The fact that you don't have to speak like a robot to it, you don't have to purely enunciate every word you say. You can speak in a normal speaking voice with a normal enunciations and pauses, and it picks it up.
Is there going to be a learning curve for people to understand what they can do?
Yeah.
And that could be pretty profound.
Yeah.
It could be a while before people really get what they can do with Siri. What about in education? The applications in education must be just phenomenal.
Well, I mean, we saw education change when kids all of a sudden were growing up learning how to type faster than they could write with their hand. And if we hit a point where people are just communicating with their computer, which is faster than even typing, that accelerates the whole system.
This is Star Trek.
This is Star Trek.
Yeah, this is computer do this.
Yeah.
Except you don't say. Although, yeah, okay. It blows me away. I keep hearkening back. I put a link a couple of weeks ago up to an old video Apple had called Knowledge Navigator, which basically showcased what we're talking about now, and mm-hmm. It was 1987 that they showed it. And even though I would talk about this and in different speaking games, I might even show the video and talk about the future. I never believed we'd have it. I don't think I ever really did. But now we're starting to see the first. Yeah, it's going to be. And the profound thing is, this is the first change in interface from the keyboard and mouse that we've had.
Yeah. And if there's been a lot of talk about sort of a virtual reality system where it actually uses motion of hands. The Kinect featured this.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we can jump right past that to simple voice commands, you've got HAL without the pod bay doors.
And voice commands are not appropriate for all environments. So
no.
We're still going to require other interfaces. But it is very exciting. So for those, the only place to get it for the time being, 4S. Do you think it'll be released once it's solid on the iPad 2? Because from what I understand, the hardware specs are about the same.
Yeah, the iPad 2 will probably get it, and I would actually imagine sometime around 10.8. I mean, 10.7 just came out for the Mac itself. I think 10.8 might see Siri on a computer,
ooh,
on a proper machine.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah.
He's giggling away because he can now talk to his computer. It doesn't matter if we have friends anymore because our computer can be our friend because of Siri. Chris Miller from Mac Station, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Mac Tech is brought to you by Mac Station, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. Mac Station. Who said business and pleasure don't mix? You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joseph Pupulo is joining us online now from the center of the universe in Tirana. He has an online e-commerce company called StickerU. It's basically an online fulfillment house printing stickers on demand. Is that right, Joseph?
Yes, we are the platform for stickers on the internet. So if you need any stickers, we are the place to go.
I don't want to talk to you about stickers, although I'm glad that that's a thriving business for you. I wanted to talk about some of your blogging and some of your other activities. You posted, a really compelling blog on the Tech Vibes blog a couple of weeks ago, talking about how Google Plus wasn't really going to cut it in knock off Facebook because your mom is addicted to Facebook. And I wanted to kind of explore that because we haven't talked to a lot of people in our generation whose parents are absolutely just embracing Facebook big time, but it certainly seems to me that your mom is one that is.
Definitely. My mom got quite into Facebook a little while ago. My dad still hasn't adopted it and still doesn't see the utility, but my mom especially has gotten into it for the purpose of just keeping in touch with family, seeing what we're up to, especially with a new child in our family. My mom, as a new grandma, is constantly on there checking out pictures and whatnot.
Now, how old are your folks?
My parents are both just turned 60.
Oh, okay. So it's a perfect age demographic. And that is where we see the most growth happening within the Facebook world right now. So, how is your mom? It's interesting that your mom and it's your mom and not your dad embracing it. Is it just about staying in touch with family?
I think it's staying in touch with family and friends. And I think beginning to recognize the value of it as a social utility. And I always use, as I said in my post, my parents as sort of a technology bellwether.
Yeah.
I mean, by no means are my parents not generally savvy with computers, but they're not necessarily cruising the tech crunches and Mashables of the world reading up on the newest technologies. But I usually come home to see them reading or doing playing games on both their iPads. So they're relatively plugged in, but it was actually sitting around Thanksgiving and seeing my mom updating Facebook, and I was just curious because I had Google Plus open, and I don't use it too actively, but I was curious whether my mom had actually heard of it, because she's pretty active on Facebook, and she heard one or two mentions, but really there was, from her perspective, there's no compelling reason to jump, and that's what sort of precipitated the article that I wrote.
I wonder if a big part of that is that Facebook really works well holistically just with your group of friends, whereas I think Google Plus is really helping us kind of segment people into different areas of our lives. And if your mom doesn't have the need to segment, she's probably not going to see what a lot of us find is the core value of Google Plus, which is the ability to keep our private lives and our business lives separate in our social media world.
Well, not only that, I mean, I think that on a high level that might play into it. I think there's also a switching level issue in terms of older demographics and how quickly they jump from one service to the next. One of the points that I specifically raise is how many people are of older demographics using what we might call is older email. So typically the email that they were using, whether it be like a Hotmail or an old Yahoo extension, or even the email address they get from their service provider. For the younger generation, there's an obvious connotation with the email address that you use and how young you are in the demographic. Mm. So I still see emails from people using those older email exchanges, and I see it being an even tougher migration over to, especially with the social element of it, from Facebook to Google Plus, and I'm not sure how they're going to make that jump.
Yeah. Now, with your mom's use of Facebook, is it do you see her expanding with the new offerings, with the kind of the Facebook plugins, the games, and the other things that Facebook is adding, or is it primarily communication with family?
So, I mean, just seeing her using the mobile application would be a good example. I recently converted her to an iPhone. She was not sure about transitioning to that, just due to didn't want anything new and difficult. But once she got on it, she absolutely loved it. And she's loving the mobile component of having a point and shoot picture camera that's immediately connected to Facebook.
Oh.
That's been one of the utilities that she's pretty excited about. Sometimes, in fact, when she's babysitting my daughter, I'll check my Facebook and see new pictures of my daughter of them playing throughout the day. So that's an example of that utility. And then a lot of the other things is social gaming. And I know Google Plus doesn't inherently have a gaming component to it, but the Google App Store is starting to. So I think the social gaming component is also very important for that demographic, especially based upon the trends I've seen from my colleagues over at Zynga, especially over on the female side in terms of the percentage of people using social games.
Yeah. Now, what about the things that are barriers for entry for the older demographics? And privacy would be the first. Was there a level of concern that your parents had to overcome before they adopted the technology, or has your mom always been feeling fairly safe online?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I've had to speak with them about, and I've seen some posts Like you get those bunk myths out there that Facebook is going to start charging and things like that. So I think, or Facebook has compromised your privacy. So
the phishing attacks.
Sometimes I get a frantic call saying, "What's going on with
okay.
this?" And I've learned to speak with her and saying, "Okay, this is how you debunk this, or this is legitimate." But I mean, I think there's a general concern about privacy, but I've seen more willingness to share online than I have from other people in demographic. My dad, however, on the other side, just doesn't want to share, doesn't like the concept of having that information out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say to him, what's the difference between an article in the newspaper or networking with friends? I mean, information still gets shared. It's just a different utility to do so.
Yeah. Now, overall, do you think this is something that is enriching your mom's life to a great extent, or is it just another way of doing the same thing she'd be doing anyways?
I think enriches it. The challenge that I'm facing right now, and the shoe's sort of on the other foot in terms of teaching the etiquette of social media.
Uh-huh.
I'll give a good example. When I was traveling, I would post, okay, I arrived at this location, I arrived at that location. While my mom was very happy that I arrived safely, she would usually post with a comment as to wherever I was going. And from my perspective, although I love my mom and I keep track of her, but I don't want the stigma of being a mama's boy in terms of having your mom post on everything that you do. So I sort of had to talk to her and said, this is what you should post publicly. Send me a message for this.
And you want your mom to drop you off a block away from school so you can walk in and act like a cool kid.
in social media terms, yes. And it's like, I got a kid, I'm in my 30s, I got a mortgage, but I still got my mom posting for everyone to see. And it's great that she's involved, but I've got a certain amount of cred I got to keep up as well.
Your street credibility has just dropped through the floor. There we go. Joseph Pupulo is a regular blogger. His online business, we will post a link to as far as the online sticker world. So if anybody needs stickers, we'll certainly have a post to that. Thanks for your time.
No problem. My pleasure.
Theo Horstall from London Drugs joins us to talk about iPad accessories. I love my iPad. I don't have that many accessories for it, though. I'm feeling the need for a few more accessories.
Well, want and need is a very blurry line.
Need. No, I definitely need more accessories. So what are the hottest selling iPad accessories?
Well, you know, there's accessories for every occasion. You know, I like to sort of categorize them in as protection, convenience, and usability. And there's obviously accessories for each one of those.
Yeah, you've got to add fun to the lexicon too.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's start with the first on your, which is protection.
Yep. So protection comes in a variety of what they call folio cases. So these are the types of cases that that protect the front and the back, and they also add the usability functionality to it, where you have stands built into these folios as well. Mm-hmm. And those range for anywhere from typically around between $50 and $70.
Yeah, now I've got the Apple's folding case, which basically folds into three different segments and allows you to tripod it up. It works pretty well, but it's got a nice magnetic cover that it turns the iPad off or dims the screen when it closes down. So that works pretty well. I don't love it, but it sure makes it light and portable.
Yeah, and the majority of the folios, I would say, share that same functionality. Mm-hmm. They do have the magnet, as you mentioned, that'll shut the iPad down. But, you know, getting to the other aspect, which is sort of usability, what people are finding is they're using iPads more and more for communication using a keyboard. So I'm not sure if you've tried the keyboard.
I use the on-screen keyboard a lot, and I'm not bad on it.
Yeah.
But I looked rather longingly at somebody that had, I'm losing the brand, but it was the iPad folded up nicely, and there was this beautiful Bluetooth keyboard built into the case, and it looked pretty sweet.
Yeah, there's a couple of different anywhere from Targus to
Zag. It was a Targus. Yep. See, I used the Zag one before on my iPad 1. Mm-hmm. I used the Zagmate or okay. I didn't like it because it had an aluminum lip around the keyboard that made it uncomfortable to use the keyboard. But I think they've solved that now. I don't think anyone's having as much.
So to break it down, so in the keyboard arena, you have a Zagmate, which
yes,
is as you described. It's literally a case that you just pop onto the iPad.
Yeah.
And it doubles as a keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard. Then they have something called the Zag Folio. So as the folios I mentioned before, where you have the functionality of a folio with a Bluetooth keyboard built right into the folio. Mm-hmm. So the best of both worlds. And then the Targus one, as you mentioned, that adds a third functionality to it, which is it allows you to rotate the iPad screen from horizontal to portrait
yes.
and back and forth while it's in the iPad folio case.
While it's in the case. And and have you used the keyboards yourself?
I have. Yeah, it's very similar to any other notebook keyboard that you would have. The chiclet or standard style keyboard. So you have the tactile response, which I think you're missing on the screen.
Yeah, you can't be a touch typist. Now, these keyboards are not full size. They're probably 92 or 94% size or something like that.
Yeah, you hardly even notice it, though. It's obviously scaled to the size of the iPad, but it does give you much faster functionality. I'm a fairly proficient typer, and the difference between typing on your iPad and typing on a keyboard, I would say I'm easily twice as fast.
Price points for getting the ones with the Bluetooth keyboard in?
They're between $100 and $120.
That's all?
Yep.
Including
the case.
Well, this Apple case, it would cost me like $70 for the leather one. And all it does is fold up.
It's leather and it looks nice.
I should have waited. I should have held out and got the Bluetooth keyboard. Okay, well, I'll have to do some shopping. Okay, so I think that's a must-have. I'm going to ask for one for Christmas.
Sure.
Okay, you just remember that. Am I on your Christmas list?
Perhaps.
Okay. What other? Okay. So we've got protection covered. What next?
Well, on the protection theme, one of the points that people seem to forget is it's a big hunk of glass, mm-hmm. and while you're protecting it with your folio and your keyboard case, most of the time accidents can happen. So I strongly recommend some sort of a cover. We call it a screen protector.
Keyboard screen protector. Yeah. Now, Apple had some issues with that back in the day. Have they softened on that line now?
I can't comment on the Apple portion of it. We find a lot of people are looking for those types of screen protectors, and they're anywhere from a removable type where you mm-hmm. can wash it to a more permanent affixed style, and they start at about $20.
And the key there is the affixed ones are the ways that I think I'd like to go, because I know that they're thinner, they're harder, they seem to be a little bit cleaner.
You know, I would disagree. I
oh,
would
really?
Say I personally use one that is removable and washable, and
uh-huh.
I find that I forget it's even there.
You do, and is the key to using them, though, making sure that everything is absolutely clean and spotless before you apply it?
That would be the right way to go. So okay. Make sure you clean the screen with a screen cleaner and a nice cloth, and then fix the protector.
I'm looking at my iPad right now with a little bit of shuddering going on because it's all gungy.
Yeah,
it's got the fingerprints all over it. It's hard to avoid. Okay, what's next?
Well, on the cleaning aspect, there's a couple of different cleaning cloths. Everybody has a cleaning cloth. Here's one that's a little different. We carry one that's by the name of Toddy. And what it features is it has different designs. They're almost like handkerchief with patterns on them. And the other aspect of them, they're antimicrobial. So one of the things you can do is you can wash them, reuse them, keep them in your pocket, and it's become kind of a fashion accessory. So those are quite nice to clean the screen.
Prevent from passing of diseases from
right.
the keyboard.
Right.
And I'm really now really unhappy with my screen. You're making me all nervous, Theo. Okay, next up.
Next up, we would have the stylus. So the stylus is so if you're not comfortable using your finger, as you mentioned, with the gunge and the grunge from your finger, the stylus is run from anywhere from about $20 to $35. And
you've brought me a new stylus.
Yeah,
now,
what
make is this one?
So the traditional stylus have
a
much
soft,
like a pencil eraser, very similar to that. It's designed to simulate the point of your finger.
Yeah.
The one that I've shown you, it literally has a little disc on the end.
It looks like a miniature satellite dish.
Sure. Now, one of the complaints people are having is that, yes, the iPad's not designed as a writing tool.
Yes.
But more and more people are starting to use it for that. So this stylus by Adonit will allow you to more or less simulate the feel of a pen. as close as ever going to get.
Got a little more precision as far as where it's placed, because you actually have a hard point that you're going to be working on. And I'm going to throw this out there. I think that for people that are doing a lot more of the artwork, the drawing and the painting, they're probably going to find this more valuable than anybody else. I'm not sure anybody is really going to get into taking notes, handwritten notes on the iPad. It just, I haven't found an app that works well doing that. I don't know if you disagree with me, but I haven't found one that works, just because as soon as your hand rests on the iPad, you run into issues.
Yeah, I think more and more people are discovering new things they can do with their iPad all the time.
Yeah.
And if people want to write on their iPad, they're going to find a way to do it.
They will find a way, but they're definitely drawing on their iPad. That's a big thing, and those apps are doing very well.
I
think that this particular stylus is going to be a boon for them.
Sure.
Okay, next.
That's all I got today.
Well, that's a fantastic assortment of things. If you want to check out any of these, visit Theo's store, which is London Drugs.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Yeah, along with London Drugs is one of our sponsors, of course, Billy Mac Mortgages, Bill Macklem Mortgages. If you have a mortgage, if you're thinking about buying a house, if you have a house and you have a mortgage and you want to make sure that your mortgage is a good mortgage, give Billy Mac a call, BillyMac.com, Billy Mac with an I. The thing about mortgage brokers is you're their customer, not the banks. And so when you talk to them, they will go and they will shop your mortgage to all of the different banks, get the best in lending institutions, get the best possible mortgage that fits your needs, and make sure that you are well taken care of. Bill Macklem's taken care of me for a long time. Why not let him take care of you? Art, I think we're out of time
on this
week's show. It's been a good and compelling show. Of course, we didn't mention that, but you can go online now if you want to, or go to your local bookstore and you can download or purchase Steve Jobs' biography, which is out. I guess it was rushed ahead based on the fact that he passed away and taken advantage of all of the media around that. But his biography is now out with lots of different quotes, and it'll there's been a kind of a movement for that past couple of weeks to canonize Saint Steve. I think that this book will take care of a lot of that momentum. Yes, he's I Saint. Yes, he was a man, and he definitely had his foibles, I believe is the term. But he it talks a lot about how he treated people and why he treated people the way he did, how he looked at his family life, and he, at the end of the day, this was a guy that was just driven to succeed and to change things. And boy, when he set his eyes, one of the great quotes in the book is that he would fight Android to his dying day. Yeah, because he thought that they were just stealing his ideas.
Well, let's hope his life and his family and all the other things outside of work didn't get compromised.
Oh, I think there's no doubt they did. Well, you know, the problem is, the bottom line is, one of the reasons that he said that he wanted the book, why he authorized a biography, which he had resisted for such a long time, was because he said he wanted his kids to know why he wasn't there as much as he could have been. Hmm. See, that's kind of sad.
That is
kind of sad, and maybe it's a message that we can all take. Next week on the show, we're going to be taking a look at the Kobo Vox, their new tablet. It should be really good, so we'll get Michael Kozlowski in here, and we'll have a good chat about the world of ebook readers, focusing on the Kobo Vox. On behalf of Art Factora, I am Bart Factora, his evil twin. I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.